views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
Welcome to Cultural Brilliance Radio, the DNA of organizational excellence with Claudette Rowley. Conversations that are transforming the world of culture and business. Claudette brings fresh, innovative perspectives that push the boundaries of what organizational cultures can and should be. Learn how to catalyze your organization's workforce into an authentic, intentional, and financially successful culture. Now here's your host, Claudette Rowley.
Hey everybody, I'm Claudette Rowley, and you are listening to Cultural Brilliance, the DNA of Organizational Excellence on Transformation Talk Radio. Stay with us for the next hour, and let us help you experience some groundbreaking ways to transform your company's culture. Twice each month, we have some of the foremost experts on organizational culture, change, and leadership, helping you understand how to make a brilliant culture the rule rather than the exception. I'm really excited about our guest today. He is Brian Rollo, and he and I are going to be talking about how to create an engaged tribe. Brian is the founder of Brian Rollo Consulting Group, which is a coaching, consulting, and training partner for organizations and individuals that put people first. So Brian is working with individuals to help them create powerful mindsets and develop leadership skills, and then he collaborates with organizations to help them become great places to work. Brian himself resides in upstate New York and works with people throughout the country, throughout the U.S. He is a professional member of the National Speakers Association, a certified professional in human resources, and a certified Culture Talk partner. And I have heard Brian speak, and he is really good. So, Brian, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Claudette. I am so excited to be here. And thank you very much for the kind words. And I have to say in return, I'm a fan of your show and especially your book. It was very formative as I've gone about learning about culture. And I want to thank you for putting that out into the world.
Oh, thanks so much. I appreciate that. Yeah. And thanks for reading it. The book, yeah, Cultural Brilliance, that came out in January for those who are listening.
So. Right. I was just going to say, I think I told you, you heard me speak at a conference a couple of months ago, and I started to read the book before the conference and then realized I had to stop and wait till I get done speaking because I did not want to say so much of your brilliant work in front of you.
So I
stopped reading it and talked about what I wanted to talk about, but then was able to go back and finish it up and really enjoyed it.
Thank you so much. Yeah. Thank you so much for that. So one of the things I know you work a lot with organizations on is helping them think through what causes organizations to fail, even when they have the right strategy, right? We see organizations all the time and we're looking at them, and I do a lot of consulting also. Well, the strategy seems good and, you know, the pieces seem to be fitting, but yet things still fall apart. And what, you know, what have you seen? What causes that?
That is a great question. And I'll tell you what I found, Claudette, is that businesses, when things don't work right, they get frustrated. CEOs get frustrated. Senior executive teams get frustrated. They roll out a strategy. They love the strategy. They put it out into the world, and it doesn't do quite what they thought it would. So they reconvene, and they think, well, I guess we needed a different strategy. So they try another strategy. They roll it out. It doesn't work quite as well as they hoped it would. And then maybe they say, you know, maybe it's not the strategy. Maybe it's the tech. We need to invest in some tech. And when that doesn't work, they say, maybe we just need to hire different people. These people aren't getting it. And what I found is really what they're not accounting for is the culture. Mm-hmm. And the culture is the environment in which all of those things live. And if the culture is not optimized, if it's not right, no strategy is going to work till it's to its fullest potential. None of those changes are going to work to their fullest potential. And it's just going to lead to more frustration until they really get in and tackle that culture and figure that out.
Yeah, definitely. And so it's that whole culture eats strategy for breakfast, right?
Exactly. You know, I like to say culture eats strategy for breakfast. And that's why culture needs to be a part of strategy. So It can't be left up in the air. It can't be an afterthought. It can't be, well, we'll figure that once we once we figure out the important stuff. It has to be really well thought out. And it has to be something that's very conscious in order for it to work well. That's what I found.
Yeah, absolutely. And I agree with that conscious, I agree with all of it. But the word consciousness, I think, is incredibly important here with culture. That we, that so many CEOs and leadership teams and, you know, senior managers and everyone in the organization often don't realize that the culture is forming constantly, right? It's always evolving. And that they, if they do something intentional about it, they have a chance of really becoming an absolutely amazing organization.
Exactly. Claudette, I can't tell you how many people have actually said to me, well, we don't really have a culture.
Oh, and my gosh.
I say, you do have a culture. You may not know what it is. You may not even recognize it, but you do have a culture. I like to say, using a simple illustration, it's like the grass on your lawn. It's going to grow. You don't have to go out there and plant it for the most part. Grass is going to grow. It's up to you whether you want weeds or a garden. So you can just let it go crazy and see what happens, but it's probably not going to turn out so well. Mm-hmm. Or you can be conscious about it. You can mold it and you can turn it into that garden.
Right, right. Exactly. Yeah. And I love that metaphor of the garden, right? And that you can tend it, you can help it grow, you can have it help it go in the right direction. So when you're working with organizations on this, what are some of the roadblocks you've run into or you've seen?
Good question. I would say obviously the biggest one, which is not really a roadblock anymore, but it was for me certainly starting out, is just organizations that don't really believe in culture, for lack of a better way to put it. Mm-hmm. They just do not believe that it is a factor, at least a significant factor in success. And that is actually why I started to describe my company the way I did, the coaching, consulting, and training partner for businesses that put their people first, because those are the types of companies I want to work with, because they get it already. I don't have to go in and then try to convince them that culture is important, because I don't know what your experience has been, but in my experience, if they don't get it, they just don't get it until the time that they're going to. And I don't want to spend the time trying to convince them that it's important. I want to talk to somebody who recognizes the fact that putting people first is important. And we could talk about that maybe a little bit, but that culture in itself is important. So I'd say that's the big one. And then the second one, I would say, is not really grasping that leadership and culture are two sides of the same coin. And that you can have any sort of culture, again, you want. We could work and create something really good. We could put programs into place. But at the end of the day, your leaders, and especially middle management, I like to say they are the filter through which all culture must run through. So if they are not on board, if they are not strong managers that connect to people, you're still going to have trouble. So that has to be worked on at the same time.
Definitely, yeah. And you know, one of the things, going back to the first point you made about, you know, an organization not believing in culture, or culture exists, right? That they don't even have one.
Right.
one of the metaphors I often use, not even a metaphor, but an example, and it's interesting because some people will squirm in their seats when I say this, but I'll say it's like your organization has a culture, just like every single family in the planet has a culture, right? And right. All the parts, you know, just like in our families, we have all these unspoken rules most of the time, right? Just ways of knowing how you're supposed to interact with certain people without ever talking about it. And that's because you have a set of beliefs around norms for behavior in your family. And I said, so it's like our organizations are no different. We have norms for how we behave, and some of them are unspoken. And it's interesting, yeah, that some people squirm, but it's true, right? You're always in an environment in a dynamic like that.
It's absolutely true. I love that as a way of explaining it, because everyone can relate. And I love that. One of our mutual friends, Teresa Agresta, who runs Culture Talk, told me when I was first starting out and becoming a certified Culture Talk partner, I gave her question after question about how am I going to make people believe in this? Because that had been my experience up to that point, really trying to convince people that culture was important. And she basically told me, you don't. You move on to somebody who does. It'll be so much easier on you. And you find the people who sort of get it, and you work with them from there. And that, I thank her for that advice every day, because it's been really valuable.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, one of the things for folks who are listening, Culture Talk, I'll just say just a word about it. Culture Talk is a survey assessment system that helps organizations and individuals understand different patterns of behavior in their culture through what are called archetypes, which are, you know, stories that have stood the test of time, right? Stories and characters that have stood the test of time. And so if you're interested, culturetalk.com is the place to find it. And Brian and I are both certified Culture Talk partners, which means we can deliver and validate the assessment and work with organizations on it. But I love the Culture Talk tool, and I think it's been incredibly, you know, it's incredibly useful. And it brings something, I think, Brian, I'm curious what you think. I think it brings something into the culture space that was missing. Talk about culture that's really straightforward. Yeah.
Without a doubt, I love it. And I'm a fan in some ways of, you know, the other tools that a lot of people use, Myers-Briggs, DISC.
Oh, absolutely. Each have, yeah, me too.
Have their place. Mm-hmm. But Culture Talk certainly has its benefits. And I think depending on the company and depending on the people there in their own microculture, how they're organized, I think Culture Talk is going to be the perfect fit for a lot of people. It's easy to understand. It's easy to relate to. And it's easy to see how archetypes, although that sort of sounds like a fancy word that we don't use in business too much, how that can apply to our real life situation. And it's playing out in this drama every day in our work lives.
Yeah, it absolutely is. And I think that drama, right? Drama is an interesting word when we think about organizations and organizational culture. And I think what gets, you know, when we are starting to talk about what are some of the things that get in the way of having the right strategy of really getting into conversations about culture, one of the things I've noticed is drama, right? Drama that comes from gossip or blame, right? Or people getting very emotionally responsive or triggered to things, and how that impacts the culture, I think, is really, really interesting. And I'm curious if you've had experiences with that kind of a dynamic where you have this really emotionally charged culture.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think anybody who has spent a lot of time in the workplace has probably run into drama at one point or the other. And the measure is how long it is allowed to exist.
Right.
And how, whether it gets put out or fed into. And that really is going to tell you a lot about the health of that organization.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's an excellent point. How long is it allowed to continue, right? And that what that tells you about the health of the organization, if it's nipped in the bud, pretty healthy. If it's allowed to continue on and on and on, right? And I've certainly seen firsthand some of the, I'm sure most of us have, how destructive that can be, right, in certain cultures. And it can take quite a while to bring that organization back to health. And we actually, on that note, we are going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to start talking about how do you create an engaged, you know, engaged tribe at work and engaged culture. And Brian's going to share some of his, the ways he works with organizations and some of his tools and strategies. So you are listening to Cultural Brilliance Radio. I'm Claudette Rowley. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Are you ready to branch out, to take a leap of faith, to love yourself and others fully? Then it is time to let go of what no longer serves you and take action to live the life you love and deserve. Hi, I'm Erica Gifford Mills of Get Rooted Radio and creator of the Rooted Life Virtual Group Coaching Series. Join me for this 12-week experience that will equip, empower, and enlighten you to live it up, love it up, and let it go. This series includes weekly group and individual coaching sessions, accountability, words of encouragement, tips and techniques to achieving your personal and professional goals. The next Rooted Life 12-week session begins August 27th. The group coaching calls will be Tuesday evenings, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. To sign up or to schedule your free Empower Hour, visit my website, getrootedradio.com, and click on the Rooted Life tab at the top. I look forward to walking alongside you on this journey. But don't delay, space is limited. Again, the next session begins August 27th. Go to getrootedradio.com to sign up today.
Are you new to playing with the law of attraction or a seasoned pro looking for an easy and organized way to monitor your co-creation endeavors as you draw them from the immaterial planes into your physical reality? Then join me over at goldenotter.us for bi-monthly new and full moon rituals where we plant seeds of intention, then harvest the fruits of our desires as part of a dynamic community in the members-only Lunar Manifestations Forum. I'm Autumn Seibel, host of Golden Otter Radio, where the metaphysical meets the mainstream, and I can't wait to meet you.
Did you know that all of the shows on the Transformation Radio Network are available as podcasts to stream or download?
Really?
Check us out. Go to transformationradio.fm. We have business shows, spiritual shows, energy healing shows, and pretty much everything in between. Something for everyone guaranteed to inspire, educate, and transform. We are transforming the world, one listener at a time.
Are you done being afraid to jump into the life that's waiting for you? Are you ready for a real shift? I invite you to tune in every Tuesday with me, Tracy L., on the Tracy L. Clark Show, where we will teach you how to live your extraordinary life. At 8 a.m. Pacific on Transformation Talk Radio, where I will provide the tools and the steps needed to help you transcend perceived limitations and move forward with an extraordinary life. For more information, visit me at TracyLClark.com.
We're back on Cultural Brilliance Radio. I am Claudette Rowley, your host. And for those of you just joining us, my guest today is Brian Rollo. He is the founder of Brian Rollo Consulting Group. And he and I are talking about how to create an engaged tribe in your workplace, aka how to have a great culture. So, Brian, we've been talking about, culture in and of itself, right? And how organizations embrace it, the ones that don't, what happens when organizations aren't embracing it. And, I know one of the things that you do is work with leaders, particularly to help them create that level of engagement, that engaged tribe. And I'd love to hear some of the, some of the strategies or ways of doing that you employ.
Sure. I'd love to talk about that. Yeah. So I use some unconventional, maybe methodology, but it's all based on things that I've seen work. Mm-hmm. Maybe unconventional is not the right word, but I don't know if anybody else is doing it quite this exact same way. Uh-huh. I like to look at organizations and their effectiveness and really measure them through what I call my connection methodology. And usually when I'm talking to somebody about this, I have a flip chart and I sort of draw it out. So I can't do that here. I'll try to explain it as well as I can. Imagine, Claudette, our typical org chart. And up at the very top, we've got our CEO. Maybe we put a circle there for the CEO. And then underneath him, another row. And maybe that's senior management. And underneath them, another row under each member of senior management with a handful of people that they manage. We start to get into our middle managers here. So we've got a third row that's much bigger. And maybe another row of managers under them, depending on how big the company is. We could keep repeating this process. But hopefully you can start to get the idea. We've got this pyramid starting with the CEO and each layer of management underneath him. And then imagine for each manager and the people that report to him, we drew a line. And it wouldn't be your typical line that we draw on an org chart. This line would measure the strength of the connection that that manager has with the person who reports to him. So if he's got someone or she's got someone that they've worked with for years, they can finish each other's sentences, they work together like a hand in glove, we're going to draw a nice, big, dark, thick line there. And if you worked with somebody else who they just don't connect, they don't talk well, they talk hard, don't speak hardly at all sorts of performance problems, we're going to draw a really thin line, maybe even dashed or dotted. Mm-hmm. And imagine that through the whole organization. Mm-hmm. So for every manager and every person that works with him, we're going to have a line that represents the strengths of the connections. Mm. My philosophy is you can measure the health of the organization by looking at how strong each of those connections are and then looking at it in the big picture. And I would say for each person that has a manager above them, they each are going to have their own work product or output. And I believe that output is only ever going to be as strong as the connection that they have with a manager above them. So really, those connections are the keys to high performance, to getting that strategy that the CEO has at the very top. Imagine a big strategy cloud above his head, and he wants to roll it out to the rest of the organization. It's going to have to run through each one of those connections. And where there's strong connections, the message is going to be transmitted, the mission is going to be transmitted, and that output is going to match it. And when the connections are weak or non-existent, progress stops. So I like to use that with my managers as a way to have them really to have a visual look at where their problems are, where their staff, and start being conscious of the fact that those connections are going to dictate their success. And maybe that's where we need to start working.
Wow, I did not know you use these strategies. So this is really interesting, Brian. I love this idea of the map, I'm calling it a map, right? Of this diagram of the line between managers and employees that represents the strengths or lack of strength of their connections. And what that must be like for an organization to see that visually represented.
Yeah, exactly. Wow. And it will start to show you why, again, we roll out strategies and they're not working in certain areas.
Right.
Or one group seems to be on board where another isn't. And mm-hmm. once we measure, as you know, once something is measured, it can be worked on.
Right. And so, it's like when it's not measured, right, I would call it, it's amorphous, right? It's this thing, it just floats around.
Exactly.
And people can't touch it or put their arms around it. But when you measure it, there's something different there. And I also, I want to highlight, because I think this is so key for listeners, that somebody's output will only be as strong as the strength of the relationship with their manager above them.
Yeah. I've seen it play out time and time again, and I'm sure you have as well.
Mm-hmm. I think it is almost universally missed.
Yeah.
There are a few managers and leaders who get it, of course, and you obviously, you know, but I don't think they make any connection, right? This person has a performance issue, reports to me.
Right. And in an unhealthy organizations, Claudette, managers are judged by all sorts of things other than their connections with their employees.
Right.
So they're getting judged for all other, who knows, many other measurable goals and strategies and things of that nature, many times tied individually to them, not to their team. Mm-hmm. And the fact that these connections are weak and it's affecting team performance is something that's not really built upon. Mm-hmm. And until we create some awareness around it.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. That makes a lot of sense. And so, that's one tool and strategy you use. And what tends to happen after this? You put this together, you represented it, right? You've showed it to people, you've talked about it. Is it then up to them, or are you engaged in kind of a phase two with this?
Yeah, phase two. So obviously the next question is, now what?
Right.
You're not doing me a lot of favors if you just draw the map and walk away.
Right.
How do we fix it?
Right.
And that's where we've got to work with our leaders. I use something, Claudette. Again, this is something sort of proprietary that I put together. I've never really, I don't think, talked about it in this sort of format. But I call it the ACT methodology, ACT.
Mm-hmm.
And that stands simply for accountability, communication, and trust.
Mm-hmm.
So if you've got a manager with weak connections, or maybe strong connections here, weak connections with somebody else, let's measure it through, let's run it through ACT. Where's your accountability level with that employee? Where's your communication level with that employee? How often are you talking? What do those communications look like? Can we tolerate any sort of conflict? And then trust. And because none of it works without trust. And I say, even though we call it ACT, we're starting with a T. We're going to figure out where our trust level is, because nothing's working without that.
Mm-hmm.
So what's happened in the past maybe to make that person lose trust with you? What can we do to start to create trust or recreate trust? And once we do that, we can start to build the communication. And once we do that, we can start to build in the accountability.
Absolutely. And thank you for sharing the ACT, right? Accountability, communication, and trust.
Yeah. I found those to be the key ones. Each one, of course, has some separate things underneath it that are part of it. But I find those to be the big three.
Yeah. Absolutely. And it's been, you know, as you were talking, I was filtering them through my experiences. And I think it's interesting how often organizations will maybe have one or two of these.
Right.
And that maybe sometimes they don't have any of them, right? they don't have a well-developed accountability, communication, or trust. But in some cases, they have one or two, and it's like you know, the third leg of the stool. The stool doesn't stand up if you're missing one.
Right. And what I do, exactly, and what I do is I actually have them put numbers to it. You mm-hmm. know, let's measure them. Let's say it's 1 to 5, 1 to 10. Let's put some numbers on each one, the A, the C, and the T. And if you're going to tell me they're all the highest level, don't come back and tell me that, you know, you're still having performance problems because something doesn't match up. Let's diagnose really where things are going off the rails. And once we do that, again, of course, like we said before, once we recognize and can measure, that's the key to starting being able to start to fix it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's interesting. So I'm curious, when you're measuring, you're having people measure, right?
Right.
Do you see just a lot of discrepancy across an organization that then you have to address?
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
Of course, because we know there's all subcultures. Mm-hmm. And I believe it is difficult but possible to have relatively high engagement groups, even in poor cultures. Maybe poor is the wrong word, but with low engagement cultures, you can still find managers who somehow created a little bit of an oasis where things are working well. And you'll find the opposite too. You'll find even with great cultures, there's some places where managers just haven't caught up to the message and it's not working. And again, a lot of times it's just they don't have the skills or the training.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it's putting those tools in their hands and teaching them how to create those connections and to go from there. But yeah, certainly. I don't know about your opinion, but I've never found it to be sort of universal everywhere. You're going to have your hot spots in each organization.
Definitely. You know, and I was just looking at a quote I have up on my office, and it's actually, I don't know who to attribute it to, but it was an idea I got off of a LinkedIn article or post. And I'm curious to get your take on this. The idea was that engagement and growth is 100% the employee's responsibility. Creating an environment where that can happen is 100% on the company. Thoughts?
Yeah, I guess I struggle a little bit with the engagement part being 100% on the employee. I think to me, the manager's got to at least meet them halfway, but I do totally agree that the company has to create the environment first.
Right.
And give them the ability to do it. So I guess, yeah, as I'm thinking as I talk, mm-hmm. I think in a perfect world, when we've given them the tools to do it and they don't, yeah, it's sort of on you at that point. And not everybody will. But if you put them in the right conditions to mm-hmm. thrive, the ones who are drawn to it, your high performers, they're going to mm-hmm. every single time.
Well, and it's interesting. I love the concept when I read about it, because what I often, and I had someone else on my show about a year ago who talked a lot about this, and his point was that a lot of engagement should fall on the employee from the standpoint that employees will sometimes say, hey, I'm not engaged, it's the company's fault.
Right.
And really advocate, like, wait a minute, you're empowered, you know, you need to have ownership in this. Where's your skin in the game? And that it really is two sides of the same coin. And so I thought it was a really interesting idea. Like, if an organization creates the environment where you can be incredibly engaged, you could still choose to not be engaged, right? But there's a lot you can do to increase your own engagement. So, which, yeah, and includes certainly the relationship with your manager.
Yeah, that's brilliant. I love it.
Yeah, that was a really interesting idea. So anyway, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, Brian does some great work on reducing workplace stress and happiness and things like that. We're going to dig into learning more about that from him. You are listening to Cultural Brilliance. I'm Claudette Rowley. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Are you ready to create a life you'll really love? Then you'll want to tune in to the hit show Life Design Radio, From Adversity to Awesome with Susan DiLorenzo, live each month on TransformationTalkRadio.com. No matter where you are in your adversity story, Life Design Radio has got you covered. Get ready to feel inspired, enlightened, and motivated. For more information about working with Susan, visit SusanDiLorenzo.com.
Learn to live in the light and unveil the authentic you with A Time of Healing Radio with me, Felice Diana, on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Tune in every third Tuesday at 11 a.m. Pacific as I help listeners understand sacred fusion energy and how to connect to the spirit that fuels the very life we live. Explore the journey of spiritual transcendence and ultimately discover the path to peace, love, purpose, and wholeness. For more information, visit atimeofhealing.com.
Dream on, fly high, and live adventurously on The Laura Meeks Show. Tune in each month on Transformation Talk Radio as host Laura Meeks guides you in finding your unique gifts and bringing them to life. As a certified life coach, speaker, and veteran bomber pilot for the U.S. Air Force, Laura knows how to follow a dream. She is ready to support you so you can dream on, fly high, and live adventurously. For more information on Laura and her work, visit flyhighliving.com.
People often ask, what does it mean to thrive? On Thrive by Gen Radio, it means body confidence, mind fulfillment, and soul synchronicity. Create synchronicity with God and learn as Jen shares action steps and real stories that will inspire you to be unstoppable in fulfilling your purpose. Tune in live each Monday at 8 a.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com and visit JenniferZellup.com to thrive with Jen.
Has your buzz for life buzzed off? Feeling ignored, invisible, and wondering if this is really all there is? The years go by faster as we gain momentum. You're halfway there. Are you gathering speed or puttering out? Hit your stride for the liberating half of life. Comfortable in your skin? You can do better than that. Tune in to Discovering You Again Radio every fourth Wednesday at 11 a.m. Pacific as host Susan Axelrod encourages listeners to decide what they want, get inspired to action, and face challenges head on. Host Susan Axelrod pulls no punches, encouraging you to grab the brass ring and soar. For more information about Susan, go to www.whatwillyourlegacybe.com.
Back on Cultural Brilliance Radio. I'm Claudette Rowley here with my guest Brian Rollo today, and we are talking about how to create an engaged tribe. Before we dive back in, Brian, how can listeners find out more about you and find you online?
Yeah, so they can find me. It's pretty easy at brianrollo.com, BRIANROLLO.com. From there, they'll find links to my different social media profiles, but just go there. You'll be able to find me, my blog. I do have a podcast. You'll find that out there, which I hope to have you on soon, Claudette. And they'll find all that good stuff, including my social media profiles and what I do.
Yeah, well, good. Well, thank you for sharing that, right? Nice to have everything all in one place on your website. So I know you do some work with, because I heard you speak about it, right? Reducing workplace stress, increasing happiness, helping managers meet their goals. So what is your take on that? How do you engage people in that process?
Thanks for bringing that up. So okay. I do have a speech that I've given, and I think you heard me give it, and it's called the 33% solution. Mm-hmm. The reason for the name is that as adults, we spend 33% of our lives at work. Mm-hmm. So roughly 33% at work, 33% personal family time, 33% sleeping. And add that to the fact that I think 70% or so of people say they're not engaged at work. And we have a lot of people who are not enjoying one third of their lives. Mm-hmm. And in fact, it's bigger than that because, as I like to say, suffering is contagious. It doesn't stay in one little bucket. So even if we drew a line with one third of our lives in each bar of our graph, if one side is suffering or unhappy, that tends to leak into the other parts of our lives. So we've all known people, or maybe ourselves, been in an unhappy work situation. And usually you can't just flip a switch and come home and be the happiest person in the world. Usually a really unhappy work situation manifests itself in our personal and family lives, and it can even cause us to lose sleep. So it really starts to eat away at each aspect of our lives. And so my rather simple, I think, proposal is just we need to work on making that 33% better, the 33% of time that we spend at work. And that as organizations, I think it's the right thing to do. I think if someone's devoting 33% of their lives to make you and your company more successful, we owe it to them to make that a positive experience, or at least as much as we can. And B, it's going to be something that makes your company more profitable, because simply put, engaged, happy employees create happy customers and do better work. I don't know anybody that can argue with that. So it's a long way around of saying, I think that employee happiness is really crucial. And as for, you know, what we can do about it, I think in the presentation I gave that you saw, I went out and pulled out, you know, Maslow's pyramid of happiness and talked about the three things that really people suffer from at work and they've said cause them the most unhappiness. And I think they are, of course, bullying being a big one. But the other ones aren't quite as obvious: a lack of clarity around job performance. So maybe not knowing exactly what is expected of them at all times, or not having the tools to do those things. And lastly, micromanagement. So if we allow any of those three to continue, we are effectively knocking away pieces of Maslow's pyramid and saying, Maslow said we all need this to be happy. You can do without a few of those things and be happy anyway. And it doesn't work that way. And that's why we have 70% of employees who say they aren't happy at work. So I think it's really sort of a simple concept in that we have to figure out what's making our employees unhappy if they are. Realize it's going to be tied into some very basic principles. And realize there's sometimes things that we have allowed to develop as a workplace, maybe not even intentionally, but we've allowed them to develop and grow stronger and stronger, and they are chipping away at people's happiness. And then being really conscious about going and identifying those things, even if it's painful as a company, and saying, this policy, this practice isn't really serving us anymore.
Yeah. Thank you for that. And I think the micromanaging, right? That stands out. I mean, they're all important, bullying, et cetera. The micromanaging stands out to me, though, is something that happens. It's like I either see that happen or I see the no management, right?
Right. Where
someone's just left. And maybe they need some guidance. You know, they can be autonomous. Maybe they need a little guidance, or they like to problem solve with somebody, right? And need a little direction. And that, I think, is something that organizations really underestimate. The dysfunction that can evolve from either the micromanagement or the no management.
Exactly. And it's funny because they're both extremes, you know, they're both extremes that managers can go to. Either I'm just totally hands off, I'm going to go sit in my office, close the door, and just whatever happens out there happens, or I have to be involved in everything. And either one of those is going to cause difficulties. It's about realizing there's a balance there. And it's going to be probably a little bit different for each person that works for you. But communication, again, finding out how that person works best, how much guidance they need, and being there to supply what they need to make them happy and make them enjoy their work experience more and be more productive.
Yeah, and it's interesting as you're saying that, two situations were coming to mind about leaders, like to the very top, like the CEO or owner of the business, whatever the case may be. As the micromanager, right? And how that just really tends to tank the culture and the health of the organization. Because in both cases I'm thinking of, no one has said anything to this person. Of course they haven't gotten anywhere, right?
Right.
I'm able to get through to them. And so that's an interesting piece too, when you see one of the top leader or one of the top leaders who, even though they should be doing other things, right, they are micromanaging, they're involved in everything.
And it's funny because that is a challenge I found, and I'm sure you probably would agree, from the very first levels of management, the hesitancy to delegate, the tendency to micromanage can happen even the newest managers and go all the way up to the CEO. It's the same sort of little inner voices that are driving that. And obviously, though, when it comes from the top, it has so much more potential to do damage.
Oh, it does. It does. Because people don't have anywhere to any recourse, right? They're...
Right. And it's setting a model for others to follow.
Right. And it sets a model, absolutely, for others to follow. So I think, I think it's a key point. It's interesting the level I've seen, you know, and sometimes I'm the one that goes in and helps to have that conversation with the leader. Because it's easier, much easier as a consultant to do that.
Right.
And say, look, this is what's really going on. This is how people feel. This is what their experience is like. And I'm sure you absolutely don't mean this. And this is the impact you're having. And then sometimes it's really that kind of truth telling that's needed to break through some of the issues in culture.
That's where I think consultants can be so valuable, because if you are in that power structure, it can be hard to, so to speak, speak truth to power, right?
Right.
At least in a way that's heard. So I think it's a valuable service when a consultant can come in there and be objective and really sort of show where there's work to be done.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm curious if some of your, the things that you, the techniques and methodology and approaches that you've developed, which are really creative and interesting, do some of those come from experiences you had as an internal employee?
Oh,
yeah.
All of the above. So okay. I didn't share too much of my story, but the really quick part is I was an employee for a long time and was made a manager, as a lot of managers are, and sort of, I want to say this carefully because I don't want to sound like I'm placing blame, and it's certainly subject to my memory, but sort of rolled out there and said, told good luck. And didn't realize that managing people was a whole other skill set that I had yet to really develop. So over the course of my career, I ended up managing hundreds of employees. And I found that, curiously enough, the better I got as a manager, the better my people seemed to perform. It was sort of miraculous. And realized that there was just some things that worked and didn't work. And then I was tasked, I became the head of training at my company with creating a leadership program. And that was what really cemented it. It's just working with managers and, you know, teaching them things and sending them out to the field and have them come back to me and figuring out even what worked for them and what didn't work. And that sort of helped me learn. And then I ended up moving on and starting my own company, as we've talked about. And it's still a work in progress, obviously, as to, you know, what's going to motivate people tomorrow, what's going to motivate people down the road. But I have found really some great success with these methodologies.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. Thanks for sharing your story, because I think that really brings a lot, you know, a lot of us have stories like that where, oh, it's this thing that happened right to us professionally that led to a lot of the things that we do now. Right? The thing that didn't go so well often is the case.
Without a doubt. And I think I think having great managers and having maybe managers that weren't so great and learning from both of those two, it's an experience we all have. And I just came to be really fascinated, probably to an unreasonable extent, as to what as to what motivates people and what creates engagement and how we can always be looking to increase performance. And it comes back to people. It really does.
Yeah, it does. It does. Yeah, well, that kind of passion is important, right? It takes us through. So we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we are going to talk, Brian and I are going to talk about the importance of mindset, which is a topic I love and I'm passionate about. So we are, this is Claudette Rowley on Cultural Brilliance Radio, and stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Tune in to Lucid Planet Radio with Dr. Kelly Neff. This hit show will illuminate your senses and empower you beyond your daily stressors and hardships. Renowned psychologist and author Dr. Kelly will captivate you with far-reaching topics and amazing guests as you wake to the greatest version of yourself. Learn to tap into your intuitions, think critically about our world, heal emotional and psychological wounds, and follow your passions to live your dreams. The Lucid Planet. Welcome home. Visit lucidplanetradio.com for more information.
To find answers to life's questions, you need to look within yourself. Dr. Glenna Rice brings your questionable conversations on Transformation Talk Radio each month. Tune in each month for insight into how you can live up to your full potential. Dr. Glenna is a physical therapist, certified Access Consciousness, and Access Body Class facilitator. How does it get any better than this? For more information on Dr. Glenna Rice and her work, visit glennarice.com.
Are you feeling stuck in unhealthy habits, toxic relationships, or low self-esteem? Do you crave a healthy relationship filled with inspiration? You might just be on the verge of attracting your soulmate. Tune in each month to The Laura Richer Show, where dating coach Laura Richer and co-host matchmaker Peggy Bennett share tools for using your dating breakdown for a relationship breakthrough. For more information, visit richerhealinghypnosis.com.
Living Lighter Radio with Jason and Patricia. We have an ecosystem approach to your life. Tune in weekly every Monday at 1 p.m. Pacific on Transformation Talk Radio as we, Jason and Patricia, discuss what's truly holding you back. We offer you the tools you need to reach your goals and at the same time be living lighter. For more information about Living Lighter, visit www.livinglighter.org.
Wow. Hey, everyone. Welcome. Welcome to the Dr. Pat Show. This is Talk Radio to Thrive By. I'm telling you, I got to pinch myself some days because when each of us gets called to do something that we so not thought was in our wheelhouse to do for a purpose that's so much greater than us, we get to show up and shine.
If you would like to show up and shine on the Dr. Pat Show as a co-host or sponsor, send us an email to inspire@thedrpatshow.com.
Learn and explore fascinating and practical uses of essential oils, how to use them, and how they can enhance your everyday life. The Oil Lounge was founded by three remarkable women with fascinating stories about how essential oils changed their lives. Tina and Laura from The Karmic Path have joined forces to educate the masses in the benefits of Young Living essential oils. For more information, visit theoillounge.com.
Everybody, this is Claudette Rowling. We're back on Cultural Brilliance Radio. Brian and I have been talking about all sorts of interesting things related to how to really engage your tribe, right? And last we're just talking about really the important role relationships managers have with their employees, and you know what happiness has to do with all of this. Brian, I know we're both passionate about mindset, aren't we?
Yes.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I know for me, mindset is a huge piece of my work with culture. And I really believe, you know, our mindsets or beliefs are driving a lot of our behaviors. And when we can become aware of mindset, it really can be transformational. And I'm curious what, you know, when you're working with mindset, how do you approach it? Or what are your thoughts and perspectives on it?
Well, like you, I believe that everything really starts with mindset. And in fact, in sort of a weird way, when I work with individuals, I do some individual coaching. In a weird way, I think mindset for individuals is sort of parallel to culture for companies, in that it's sort of this invisible thing, but it controls everything. Mindset may be even more powerfully than culture, because your mindset is going to determine what you can and can't do. And a lot of times, I know myself and people I work with, we always want the next tactic. Mm-hmm. We want the next strategy. If you did something, Claudette, I want to say, what worked for you, Claudette? Mm-hmm. Or if my friend does something, I want to say, what worked for you? Not realizing, unless I get my mindset right about achieving whatever it is I'm talking about, the tactic that worked for you is probably not going to work for me. Mm-hmm. I need to really get my mindset in the right place before I even start to roll out tactics. So I love working with people around those things and really trying to tune that to get them to achieve whatever they're trying to achieve.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And I think so often we see, I'm sure, you know, both of us see this, where there are tactics or strategies that are employed and no one's checked the mindset.
Exactly.
No one's checked the mindset. And it's hugely important. I was talking with, I had a presentation this morning with some leaders, and I was talking about something I speak on, which is culturally brilliant leadership. And, you know, brought up this idea of thinking with mindset. Like if someone has a mindset of change is bad and this is going to be hard and awful, I said to the group of leaders, so what do you think their behavior is going to be like, right? This is the power of mindset.
Right.
You drive all of your behaviors.
Or you roll out goals to an employee and they say, I can never meet those goals. And you give them all the tactics in the world, but guess what? They don't meet the goals because
they already told you they weren't going to.
Exactly. Now they got to prove themselves right. Not consciously, but they've not put themselves in a position where they can really make those things happen.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's so true. I mean, it makes a huge difference. So I think, you know, years ago, I did some work with mindset with a colleague, and what we say, this was maybe 5-6 years ago, roughly speaking, and we put together a methodology around mindset. We were really excited about it, and we couldn't get this off the ground. And then when I started developing my cultural brilliance methodology and wrote the book and all that, which, you know, mindset is a big factor in the book, it's been interesting how much more open I've noticed folks are to mindset now. In even just 5 or 6 years, it's a much, you know, it's more accepted, right? It's more commonly talked about. Is that a shift you've noticed?
Without a doubt. And in fact, at first I would sort of sheepishly mention it, and maybe we can work on mindset too when I'm coaching somebody. And I've not had one person who said, I don't want to do that. They jump into it. And if I can share one story with you really quickly, sort of an outstanding story for me. I started coaching a person who was trying to rebuild their career. What was a very promising career, but had struggled with addiction.
Ooh. Yeah.
And really did so much to damage their career to a point where they thought they had nowhere to go. Mm-hmm. And was working sort of a retail job. Not that there's anything wrong with it, but it wasn't fulfilling their inner drive, their hero, as you and I might say in culture talk language.
Right.
It wasn't fulfilling their passion. They were just so unhappy. So we sat down, and my method is sort of, first of all, let's figure out what's holding you back. What's your limiting belief? And what do you want to do, first of all? So she sort of knew what she wanted to do, and she wanted to help other people. But she had a million reasons why she couldn't do it. Who's going to hire me? Who's ever listened to me? Don't you know I did this? Don't you know I did that? Don't you know there's these news articles out there about me? Anybody can look up and see all the horrible things I did. And it was just stuck. And then I worked with her to shift that and realized that's why you're the perfect person to help other people. And within 4 weeks to 5 weeks, she was approved to become going to training to become a counselor and got a scholarship to go through it. And as of the last time I spoke to her, she left her job, was now full in on being a counselor and wants to be a speaker and help other people struggling with addiction. Mm-hmm. And signed up to her local speaking club and is working on making that happen. And she made it happen, but it was just that little shift in mindset because those limiting beliefs were keeping her from ever taking those actions.
Thank you for sharing that story. That is an amazing story, you know, because you think about someone who is now going to contribute so much, right, to others who have struggled with addiction.
Yeah.
And if you hadn't had that, you and she hadn't had that conversation and she wasn't able to shift her mindset with your coaching, she might not be doing that right now. And it would have been a loss. It would have been a loss. And so to me, what's striking me is the absolute power of shifting into a mindset that serves us, which allows us to then, I think, serve other people in most cases.
Yeah, without a doubt. To me, that's why I do this, Claude. You know, those kind of things is why I do this because, again, go back to archetype. I like to make things change happen. To see that happen, I know I played the tiniest little role in it is, you know, very fulfilling for me, and it makes me just want to do more.
Yeah, absolutely. I can tell. Passionate, right?
Exactly.
Yes. Yeah. So, you know, I know our show has flown by. You know, I can't believe we're almost wrapping it up here. But what is something you'd love to leave listeners with? Like a tip, you know, a mindset piece, a perspective for folks who are really looking at engaging their tribe and improving their leadership?
It's a great question. I just recently went to a conference with somebody who does sort of similar work, and I asked her, you know, what was her catchphrase? And I'm going to steal it from her because I thought it was great. And it was very simple. It was, things can be different. So whether that is going to a workplace where people are suffering, or whether it's dealing with an individual, the first step is realize things can be different. And if what you've done so far hasn't worked, it doesn't mean it won't work. It means maybe it's a different mindset. Maybe it's a shift in culture. Maybe it's just this one degree of trying something a little bit different, and things can be different. And realize that. And if you keep pushing and can honestly take a look at yourself, whether it's as an organization or as an individual, really potential is out there.
I love that. Things can be different. I mean, I love the simplicity of it. It's so, you know, I think I'm a big fan of Occam's razor. The simplest solution is usually the best and most correct one. And I love the simplicity of that, right? Things can be different.
Yes, I loved it. I have to give full credit to the lady who sat next to me at the conference. She's probably going to kill me for not remembering her name. But maybe find me, I'll find her and send her out to them. But yeah, I loved it. And I sort of embraced it. And I just think, like you said, it's simple, but it's empowering too.
Well, things can be different. Oh, okay. How could they be different? So it just sends your brain down a completely different path versus things will never change. It's not going to work. It's all those negative things, you know, things can be different. So I love that. So Brian, I want to thank you so much for being a guest today on the Cultural Brilliance Radio Show. Thank you for being here.
Well, thank you for the opportunity. It has meant a lot to me. I've enjoyed it so much. And I really thank you for the chance to do this.
Oh, yeah, my pleasure. And thanks for just the great information you shared, the wisdom, your experiences. I love your techniques and methodologies. I mean, they're really, really, really smart and brilliant. So I'm sure listeners really benefited. And listeners, as always, thank you for tuning into Cultural Brilliance Radio. We had a great time, as we always do. Please join us the second and fourth Fridays of each month at 1 p.m. Eastern and 10 a.m. Pacific. We'll be back here in a couple of weeks. And until then, have a great rest of your summer.
You've been listening to the hit show Cultural Brilliance Radio, the DNA of organizational excellence with Claudette Rowley. Conversations that are transforming the world of culture and business. You can download this podcast and find out more about Claudette and her breakthrough work at ClaudetteRowley.com. Please contact Claudette and find out how you can create a brilliant culture.